This will be a talk on the third and fourth foundations of mindfulness. Mindfulness of mind and mindfulness of the Dhammas. Just by way of review, we have already talked about the first two foundations, mindfulness of body and mindfulness of feeling tone. Recall, if you will, that feeling in the second foundation of mindfulness is not translated as emotion, but rather as the quality of pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant that reveals itself in each moment of existence. Recall that this quality arises at once with each contact between the stimulus and one of the sense doors, and that it represents the moment of possible freedom, since the roots of suffering have not appeared on stage yet. So today, in this talk, there is another translation issue. Just as feeling doesn't represent emotion in Eastern thought, so the word mind is more accurately reflected by what we would call mind-heart. Larry Yang, the Spirit Rock teacher, tells the story of his father putting his hand on his heart and saying, "I'm thinking of something," with his hand on his heart. This is a kind of a way of demonstrating this notion of mind-heart. Citta is the term used for consciousness or the state of the mind-heart. It refers not only to cognition, but also includes emotion. And we can't forget that emotions have a strong cultural flavor. They're strongly culturally conditioned, which further complicates our interpretation of the teachings. The usual translation of the third foundation is mindfulness of thoughts and emotions. I personally like mindfulness of mind states, with the understanding that this includes both cognitive and emotional elements, the state of the mind heart. We will be drawing heavily on the book Satipatthana by Venerable Anilayo, and I want to begin the discussion of the third foundation by reading from that book. He says, "The task of mindfulness is to remain receptively aware by clearly recognizing the state of mind that underlies a particular train of thoughts or reactions. Such uninvolved receptivity is required because of one's instinctive tendency to ignore whatever contradicts or threatens one's sense of importance and personal integrity. The habit of employing self-deception to maintain one's self-esteem has often become so ingrained that the first step to developing accurate self-awareness is honest acknowledgement of the existence of hidden emotions, motives, and tendencies in the mind, without suppressing them. Maintaining non-reactive awareness in this way counters the impulse towards either reaction or suppression, thereby deactivating their emotional and attentional pull." So here he's talking about the importance of this receptivity of the mind that clearly recognizes these states of mind. And then a quote directly from the Majjhima Nikaya, the Satipatthana Sutta itself. This is the Buddha's words. Speaking about mindfulness of mind and emotions. "A bhikkhu knows a lustful mind to be lustful, and a mind without lust to be without lust. He knows an angry mind to be angry, and a mind without anger to be without anger. He knows a deluded mind to be deluded, and a mind without delusion to be without delusion. He knows a contracted mind to be contracted, and a distracted mind to be distracted. He knows a great mind to be great, and a narrow mind to be narrow. He knows a concentrated mind to be concentrated, and an unconcentrated mind to be unconcentrated. He knows a liberated mind to be liberated, and an unliberated mind to be unliberated. So this is a description of the extent and the clarity of mindfulness regarding what's going on in our thoughts and emotions. The first instruction from the Buddha is regarding the three root defilements of greed, hatred, and delusion, or raga, or lust, which is often in our culture has a sexual connotation, but includes all forms of greed in the text. Raga, or lust, dosa, or anger, hatred, and moha, or delusion. Mindfulness of these roots undercuts suffering, so look for their presence or absence. Are they present in the mind? Does the mind have anger? Does the mind have lust, ignorance, or are they absent? Study, what do they feel like? When did they begin? Did you notice their arising? Are their stories connected? Are there triggers? What patterns do you notice? Greed and hatred are highly impulsive, out of control, self-centered, with this sense of me. There is, with both greed and hatred, no sense of consequence. Rather, there is frequently a sense of entitlement. Kind of a because I say so. Delusion is broad and harder to see. We become lost in our stories, projection and denial and procrastination. In the writing of the Dhammapada, the three roots are likened to, lust is likened to fire. Hatred or anger is likened to being in the grip of an enemy. And delusion is likened to being caught in a net. Keep in mind that these three elements are not our basic nature. Our basic nature, rather, is that of wisdom, kindness, and compassion. The second instruction from the Buddha regarding mindfulness of thoughts and emotions is that regarding contracted or distracted states of mind. And the contracted states of mind would be, an example would be sloth or sleepiness, distracted states of mind, something like restlessness or worry. And then a third instruction regarding the four higher states. The mind, is the mind concentrated or not? Is the mind free from defilements or not? So these are the areas of exploration in our examination of the mind, heart. In contrast to Vedana, from the second foundation of mindfulness, Vedana, being the feeling tone, in contrast to that, which is more primitive, mindfulness of the mind and heart is more complex and subtle. This is the world of thoughts and emotions, everything that can happen in the mind. And all of this comes and goes unbidden by us. Jack Kornfield says it's like pasta coming out of a pasta factory. So when these thoughts and emotions arise, then the mind elaborates on them through dialogue and stories. This is papancha, the proliferation of thought. It contracts around them and worries. interrupting this dialogue with mindful awareness can completely change one's experience and can ultimately change the world. Stephen Batchelor, Buddhist teacher, says, "The core of a meditative attitude is questioning itself. For meditative questioning partakes in the nature of the mystery itself. It is a kind of fundamental astonishment or perplexity, reflecting that which simultaneously shows itself and withdraws." So just for a little exercise in this moment, you might want to close your eyes and ask yourselves these questions. How is the mind right now? Is there bodhicitta? Is there awakened heart and mind? Or is it rather self-involved? Is the heart open? Is there greed, aversion, doubt, concentration? Are we relaxed or tense? Is the mind full of thoughts, or is it empty and spacious? Is it full of opinions or not? Is it contracted or expansive? Are there bodily components, physical manifestations? Is the emotional state skillful, such as generosity, metta, equanimity, or unskillful, with envy, avarice, and greed? Don't suppress anything. Just recognize what's present and hang out with it. Notice the mind without an I or a mind. So we continue with an exploration of the fourth foundation of mindfulness, which is usually called mindfulness of dhammas, mindfulness of mind objects. One translation is, or can be, misleading. Here the Buddha invites us to examine our experience through the core teachings of the hindrances and aggregates, sense bases and factors of enlightenments and Four Noble Truths. Once again, reading from Anilayo's book. What this Satipatthana is actually concerned with are specific mental qualities, such as the five hindrances and the seven awakening factors, and analyses of experience into specific categories, such as the five aggregates and the six sense spheres. These classificatory schemes are not in themselves the objects of meditation, but constitute frameworks or points of reference to be applied during contemplation. During actual practice, one is to look at whatever is experienced in terms of these dhammas. Thus, the dhammas mentioned in this Satipatthana are not mental objects, but are applied to whatever becomes an object of the mind or any other sense door. And he says, in contrast to the previous Satipatthanas, contemplation of dhammas is particularly concerned with recognizing the conditioned nature of the phenomena under observation. So using these teachings of the dhammas is like seeing our mind-heart states through different lenses. We're not actually using these as objects, but rather we're looking at them as a framework or as a lens through which to see what is in the mind and heart. For example, when a thought arises, does it reveal a hindrance? By using these core teachings, the hindrances and aggregates and so forth, as lenses, we come to see, for example, this is the mind of wanting. This is the mind entangled. We recognize these as habits of mind and learn how deeply we have become entangled, thus nurturing the process of awakening. A story here may help to clarify how deeply our conditioning has us in its grasp. There was a bear that for years had paced up and down the length of his 20-foot cage. His caretakers held great hope for the bear as they removed the cage, setting the bear free in a large meadow. But the bear continued to pace only the same 20 feet, limiting itself to what had been known, to what it had learned it was. This is what we do with the mind. We limit ourselves to what we have known to be ourselves. So through attention to the teachings of the Dharma, we can begin to know what is actually so. We see more clearly what happens, how patterns change, how thoughts arise and dissolve, how emotions intensify and dissipate. Thoughts stay but a moment. Feelings and sensations come and go. The whole experience that we call me is just a story we tell ourselves. As E.B. White said about a frog, you can't really analyze it. It dies under dissection. So as we practice with mindfulness of thoughts and emotions in the light of the core teachings, we come to see ourselves quite differently. We see that everything is fluid, changing, and in that sense, empty. The jealousy, the ill will, disappear on their own, and the heart becomes still, like a mirror. These are the words of Yongge Mingyur Rinpoche. He's speaking about the mind's natural clarity. When we recognize and become grounded in awareness, the wind of emotion may still blow. But instead of being carried away by the wind, we turn our attention inward, watching the shifts and changes with the intention of becoming familiar with that aspect of consciousness that recognizes, oh, this is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm thinking. As we do so, a bit of space opens up within us. With practice, that space, which is the mind's natural clarity, begins to expand and settle. So we come to know that we are indeed a process, and we don't identify so much with whatever comes up in the mind. Rather, we notice, wow, I was really caught up in that one. The identification with our stories, our memories, our precious opinions loosens as we see everything change. The me and my that seemed so real, so important, it turns out are extra, a figment of the imagination. And more to the point, the source of untold suffering. With this insight, a marvelous freedom begins to grow, as does compassion, because the heart is open. A child falls, you help her up. Someone is hungry, you feed him. It is so natural. It's just us here, resting in our true nature. Joy and equanimity arise by themselves. We feel connected, one with, and we come to rest in our true nature. We come to see the world with the eyes of the beloved. And to close, again, the words of the Buddha directly from the Satipatthana Sutta. Monks, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, for acquiring the true method for the realization of nibbana, namely, the four Satipatthanas.